You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
I have to sneeze, but I'm terrified that my bowels will evacuate if I do.
If you sneeze, it is very important that you clench at the same time. Aaron.
I'm going to sneeze. I'm going to clench and sneeze.
Listen to me.
I'm going to clench and sneeze.
Don't close your eyes. It's impossible to sneeze if your eyes are open. Open your eyes. You're being selfish.
I'm going to clench and sneeze.
Is it still in?
I think I broke a rib.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 118 for the 5th of February, 2011, and it's still bloody hot.
I gotta say, Dave, I love that clip. Well chosen, man.
It's a great clip. I've decided that we're gonna start identifying these clips because the whole forum has been closed and we're not really getting submissions for it anyway. That, of course, was from Get Him to the Greek, which you're right. I love that clip. It's a fantastic clip. Normally, I try and make the clip in the opening kind of relate to something that we're doing in the show, but there are times where you just go, nah, screw it. We just got to put something
just
funny.
Fantastic. That one.
I was trying to find a clip where I could isolate where they're stroking the wall, you know, but there was too much happening in there. I just couldn't get there. I couldn't isolate a good, decent enough clip. I'm Dave McVeigh. I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm still. Let's just move on.
For those who don't listen to the Geek Actually podcast, it is really hot. It's 41 degrees here in Sydney. And if you hear car noises and fan noise and stuff, it's because we are doing kind of an outdoor broadcast today, because the only way...
Because we're just not going to make it through the show if we don't.
And the only way we could have actually done this show at all is to have opened the windows. So the windows are open. The car noises are going outside. Just think of it like we're at some event and it's some sort of outdoor broadcast, because it's the only way you're going to get a show today. If we had the doors and windows closed, it would be so hot the computers would fuse, melt, and we would just expire and fall down on the ground. So here we are. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. And this week we are going to review the new Dwayne The Rock Johnson film, Faster.
Yes.
We are also going to take a... we're also going to take a look at the nominations for Best and Worst. No, we're not.
No, we're not.
We've done that already. That was last week. We also got a little bit of film news and a new trailer, actually, for one of the most odd-looking films I think I've seen in a while, and that I'm actually kind of interested in seeing, and does have a tie with Faster, so we will have a look at that. We are also going to deliver a new list of five in... honor of Faster, we're going to do five revenge films.
Yeah.
Which I will point out is a real shame we don't have Mirren on the show this week, because revenge films are her favorite genre.
Yeah, she strikes me as that kind of girl.
She loves a good revenge film. So yeah. We will come back to that list in a little bit. But first, as we've been doing for the last few weeks, what you been watching this week, Josh?
I wasn't ready for that question. I was like, oh God, what have I been watching this week? Did a bit of TV, mainly been playing games, man. Like, I need to get my geek cred back up. I need to get my geek cred right back to its standard. So I'm going back and starting to finish all of the games that I haven't played lately.
Fair enough.
So I've restarted and almost finished Call of Duty Black Ops. I am finishing Dead Space 2 at the moment. I've restarted Psychonauts, which is about to be reviewed and chucked up on the site as well. It's just been a return to gaming. Plus, I am obsessed now with PC gaming to the point where I'm actually starting to budget to get a new laptop for my room just because I need a gaming machine again. It's just...
DC Universe really affected you deeply, didn't it?
Oh, dude, it wasn't that. It was just getting back down and sitting down and just having control again. Mm-hmm. And also being able to aim is just totally changes the experience.
Yeah,
it's just playing Call of Duty and then going back and playing Half-Life and literally snap killing someone like a kilometer away with a pistol, I'm just like, this is so much easier. It's just ridiculously easy.
I will say,
easy.
aiming with a mouse is so much better than a controller. But
why? What did I say? Oh, right, because I'm getting a laptop. No, dude, I have a good desktop, but the desktop has to stay in the lounge because of the shows.
Yeah.
So I need one for my room. And I mean, it doesn't need to be a laptop. It may be a desktop. But anyway, shut up. You don't rule what I do with
my computers.
You're
not the boss of him.
God.
Josh is talking to our chat room. And remember, just a reminder that you can watch us live and join our chat room and harass Josh at any time you want to. And that's a Geek Actually.
Everyone else does.
GeekActually.com/live. We typically start our recording day at 12 p.m., which starts with the Geek Actually show about an hour, hour and a half. And then we start the film show after that. So there's no strict starting time. Mm-hmm. But it's around the 1:30-ish mark, sometimes 2 o'clock. So if you want to come and join us, you're welcome to. Follow me on Twitter, at David McVeigh. I always post out when the Film Actually show is about to start. Mm-hmm. So that way mm-hmm. you can always find it that way as yep. well. Okay, let's... well, what have I been watching? God, I'm about to jump straight past me. I'm continuing on the adventure of watching a film a day for the Tumblr blog. Mm-hmm. This week I've watched a host of films, and I'm really annoyed. I got to say, my most annoying thing that's happened this week is that I was re-watching David Cronenberg's The Dead Zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my wife thinks I'm insane, and my lovely wife Katie thinks I'm insane, and you guys will probably feel the same way, but I watched The Dead Zone. I got it on Quick Flix rental DVD, and I'm watching it, and it got to the last 10 minutes of the film. Now, this is a film I've seen about, probably 40 times, so I know the ending of the film well, mm-hmm. but I got to the last 10 minutes of the film, and the disc was faulty. And it just froze and locked up, and no matter how I cleaned it, couldn't get past that last 10 minutes. And I couldn't watch the rest, and I couldn't record it as a film I had watched that day. And my wife goes, why not? And she goes, what happens in the last 10 minutes? So I described to her in detail exactly what happens. And she goes, well, why can't you use this film? I said, because I didn't see it all. I didn't watch it to the end. And because I didn't watch it to the end, it doesn't qualify. So I'm kind of annoyed by that. So I immediately had to watch another film starting at like 11:59 at night because I had to get a film in that day. And so I watched Skyline.
Mm.
Oh dear.
It's so true.
You could read my full review of Skyline up on the site if you want to. But basically, I was actually watching Skyline, and I thought this was very fascinating because I actually was watching it going, I don't understand all the hate this film got. Yes, it's a severely mediocre movie, and it's incredibly average, and the acting is not particularly good, but the visual effects are really nice. It's beautifully shot on the red cameras, looks really pretty in the whole bit. And I'm going, so why did it get so much hate? It's mediocre, but there are so many worse films. Until I got to the last 10 minutes. And the last 10 minutes of that film are incomprehensible.
And then you understood.
And I understood. Crystal clear. The last 10 minutes of Skyline is incomprehensible.
Yeah.
And you sit there watching it going, wow, what were you guys on when you came up with this? And I'm not going to go into any spoilers here, but just for those who have seen it, you know what I'm talking about with the glowing red and blue brains. And, forget it. It's not worth it. They said that they spent $1 million on shooting this film and then $10 million on the visual effects. It shows.
Mm.
Spend a little bit more money on the film next time. Get better actors and give another pass on the script. You might get a better film.
Absolutely.
Right? So that was Skyline. I also watched a couple of classics this week. One of them in particular I just want to mention very quickly, which is Taps. Mm. Which is George C. Scott and a very, very young Tom Cruise, a very, very young Sean Penn, and a very, very young Timothy Hutton as military school cadets who take over their school when it's threatened to be closed down. Really interesting, going back and watching that film. It's kind of like a military version of Lord of the Flies. It's really intriguing. 1982, I think it came out.
Wow.
Well worth having a look at if you haven't seen it in a while or if you haven't seen it.
I will definitely have a look at Taps.
You can read my review once again on my Tumblr account. I've got it up there. Popshot says he wants to watch the film Battle Los Angeles. Mm. Yes, so do we all. So say we all.
Goddamn right.
We're all
man.
Waiting for that one. But yeah, it was a beautiful trailer for that one. I also watched last night probably one of the weirdest films I've seen in quite some time. Good film, but just odd, which was The Secretary, which I'd never seen. I'd always kind of like pushed it to the side and never got to it. And I finally sat down and watched it. One of the mini DVDs I have down in my collection that I had not watched. And I watched that. And if you haven't watched it, that's a really interesting character piece. Mm. It's not what you expect. And it's probably the best performance from Maggie Gyllenhaal I've probably seen. And James Spader is always very reliable. Interesting film about domination and submission and the relationship between these people. Very, very interesting. Have I seen Push? Yes, I have seen Push. I saw it a year and a bit ago when it came out. I didn't think much of Push. I thought it was kind of mediocre.
I thought it had a lot of great ideas in it, but it was just... You know what it was like? It was like Jumper.
Yes.
In the fact that
good
it was
concepts,
just like...
Bad execution.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you had to spend a bit more... Again, same thing. If you had to spend a bit more time on story and a little bit less money on all the effects that you were using, you might have had a better film.
I will give Jumper... not Jumper. I will give Push credit for the fact that Chris Evans is quite good in it.
Yeah.
And Dakota Fanning is... sensational in it. Dakota Fanning is one of those actresses I'm watching very, very, very closely, not in the pedophile kind of way, because I think she is developing into a really... She was a sensational child actor, and I think she's developing into a really interesting adult actor, especially with her performance in The Runaways most recently. So I'm keeping an eye on her because I think she's got a lot of potential still up her sleeve. Okay, let's move into our feature film. As I say, if you want to follow the films I'm watching, for those who don't know, I set myself a mission to try and reinvigorate this love of cinema, not just a critical eye, but just watching films for film's sake. And I have a Tumblr log where I log each film, and I have to watch at least one movie a day. And I put up mini reviews for these films. DavidMcVeigh.tumblr.com, and you can follow that. And the ones that are more recent films or that are longer reviews, I then feed over to Geek Actually. But if you want to see them all, go to the Tumblr log. Okay? All right, let's move on. It is hot. We want to try and scoot through this as fast as possible. Today's feature film review is Faster, directed by George Tillman Jr. and written by Tony and Joe Gaten. It stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, although I think he's dropped The Rock completely now, hasn't he?
It's Dwayne Johnson now.
It's Dwayne Johnson. He's pretty much dropped The Rock altogether. Billy Bob Thornton, Carla Gugino, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Maggie Grace, and Moon Bloodgood. And then it's also got Lester Spate, Courtney Gaines, John, now I'm going to massacre this name, Sirigliano, I think it is, and Buzz Belamondo. I love that name, Buzz Belamondo. and they are the targets. They play all the games.
And you missed out one.
No, I didn't. I know who you're going to mention. Terry Tate? Yeah, Terry Tate is Lester Spate.
Fine.
Terry Tate is actually a character he played.
I know, but to let everyone know, Terry Tate, if you are either a gamer, you will know him as the voice of Coltrane in Gears of War, or you will know him as Terry Tate, the office linebacker, which is his alter ego. If you guys haven't seen it, go out right now and look it up. The office linebacker videos are amazing, but it is awesome to actually see this guy on screen because he is a giant human being. And yes, we will get to him more in a bit.
So Lester Spate is his real name, or Spite. I'm not sure quite how to pronounce it. But if you look at his IMDb and you look at this film, he's actually going by his real name. So I had a feeling you were going to draw me up on that one.
Yeah.
This plot is very simple, and I took this straight from IMDb's little encapsulated plot. It just says, an ex-con sets out to avenge his brother's death after they were double-crossed during a heist years ago. During his campaign, however, he's tracked by a veteran cop and an egocentric hitman. And that's it, in a nutshell. It's a really simple... really simple plot. He gets out of jail and he wants revenge. Plain and simple. Let's have a look at the trailer and then we'll talk about this film, because I think we may have conflicting opinions on this film. But all right, so here's the trailer for Faster.
May I help you?
Sir!
So what do we got?
We got our shooter.
It's not just fear, that's recognition.
He knew him.
Turns out some gang ambushed them and killed his brother.
Smile for the camera.
It took me 10 whole years to track down these people for you.
I'm gonna kill them all.
Smile for the camera.
Please don't hurt me.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
There's been another shooting.
I got a hunch it might be our guy.
They've all got records, armed robbery, rape, assault. Now it seems like he's going after everyone on his list.
I've been expecting you.
Witnesses placed the second shooter at the scene.
Said they had a little shootout in the hall.
You think you're done? There's one more.
It's pure. No hesitation.
He's fast as you.
He's faster.
I've got you now, mate.
You better be sure, because that's a long, dark road you're headed down. Where are you?
devil got your heart twisted. The vengeance and hate.
Can you find it in your heart to forgive? I can't.
All right, so that was the trailer for Faster. And first thing I'm going to say is that we were, you know, Josh and I were just talking about it while the trailer was playing. Yeah, The Rock was a character. The Rock was a wrestler. It was a character. It was a character for the WWE, I want to say, whatever it was. And that's what he was. And when he first made his first couple of movies, he was The Rock because that was what people knew him as. Yeah. And he's been very clever. He's been very clever about slowly moving to Dwayne Johnson. And he was at first Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Now he's just Dwayne Johnson. Yeah. He managed to move himself back to his own personality. Mm. And somebody's actually written here, couldn't they have gotten Jason Statham for the role? Dwayne Johnson is not the problem.
Dwayne Johnson is actually a fantastic character in this thing. Number one, he is huge.
He's bigger than I've ever seen him look before.
Yep, exactly. He's back to the size he was when he was a wrestler. And to be honest, from the moment that this film starts, he is what holds it together. Because the first time you see him, he is just pacing a cell ready to get out. And you just watch the whole time that he is literally at the start of the film, that first 10 minutes, all he is doing is trying to get out of that prison and start his thing. And that's really, it sets up the entire film. It's just at the start of the film, he has no question that all he plans to do with the rest of his life is deal with these people. And that really set me up into a good place, from the moment.
Look, and what I said in my review on the site was the first 20 minutes this film had me.
Oh, dude, the first 20 minutes, just had me, but I was really excited how it was going
to
pan
out. And I leaned to Josh at one point and I said, this is and this is not a negative thing, but the script is written like an early Schwarzenegger film. It is perfect for somebody like Dwayne Johnson. Very little is spoken. It's all about the action. Mm. He doesn't speak much. He just looks imposing, which is very much like early Schwarzenegger films. Mm. Don't make him talk. Just make him look mean and imposing. And it works so well. And the car racing off and his reactions and that first
Good
choice of music. We're actually going out today on for our audio listeners, we're going to go out with a little bit of Clint Mansell's score.
Mm. Yeah.
So you'll be able to hear a little bit of that as we go out on our close today. But, you know, the score is really good. The camera work is really good. That first kill is so sudden.
Yeah.
You see it a little bit of it in the trailer when he just walks into the office, you know, and it really does set you up for it. The introduction of Billy Bob Thornton,
Billy Bob Thornton in general. He put in a lot of work, and anyone that thinks that this is a simple role should really actually take another look at him. He is gaunt. He is really just greasy the entire time, but in a way that really works on camera, and it feels a bit different from Billy Bob Thornton. Even though essentially he is the downtrodden, sort of guy that's the role he plays, it felt like he was really putting a lot of effort into the character.
And then we introduced Carla Gugino, who I really like as an actress. And
she was phoning that out.
No, wait. We're still talking about the first 20 minutes. So in the first 20 minutes, we introduce Carla, and I go, Carla's in this. This is looking good, right? We've got a good death scene. We got all this sort of happening. Mm. And now for me, after about the first 20 minutes, this film just gets dumber and dumber and dumber.
Well, more than dumb, the other problem that I really had with it is that it really kind of sells itself as the opposite to what the name of the film is. It actually sets you up for a film that's going to get increasingly more intense, and it actually slows down.
Yes.
And to a grinding halt by the end of the film.
And it's also not satisfying, because what we established in that first 20 minutes was this is going to be the ultimate revenge film.
Oh, dude, and it just, you are ready for that.
And you're ready for it. And after the we don't want to go into too many spoilers, but after the scene with the date rapist guy, the older dude, that's where the film kind of falls apart for me.
Yeah.
After that point, you just kind of go, okay, well, I could leave now. Mm. There's not really any more in this film it has to offer me. And Dwayne Johnson wasn't the problem. He was fine. Mm. The problem, I think, really comes down to the script didn't know where to go. It didn't know what to do. It kept trying to introduce new elements, like the assassin.
Who is just the most unnecessary character in the film. You don't need him.
You don't need him.
He could be anyone. And more importantly, he's this other character. He should have been one of the people in the situation. Like,
yes.
Even if he wasn't on the list or they didn't know about him, maybe he was in another room or something like that, just incorporate him as part of the story, not just this outside part.
And then we have to introduce the Maggie Grace character, who is the assassin's girlfriend, and then we've got their whole relationship issue going on, and we've got the fact that the assassin actually has some sort of emotional problems that he's talking to his psychiatrist. And it's like, I don't care about any of this.
Yeah, no. You know,
it's like, I don't care about any of this.
I would have been okay. Like, when there's the first scene that we see him eyeing Dwayne Johnson and he's on the phone to the psychiatrist, if that had been as far as that whole thing had gone, I would have been fine with it, because it would have been like this character
In that first 20-minute moment. Yeah. We're still in this in moments where we're intrigued. I was intrigued at what this killer character was about when he first got introduced.
Dude.
But then we started to go into weird areas with him where I go, this is just taking away revenge time.
Look, and I was really into him, like, as kind of this guy that doesn't fail. I actually admired that as a character idea, because it was like when he first has that confrontation that you see in the trailer with them shooting out in the hallway, and he's trying to take out Dwayne Johnson, and Dwayne Johnson's just plowing bullets into the corner of the thing so much that he just cannot move and just bails. The speech after that where he's saying this guy's just unstoppable, he has no hesitation.
Well, I think the line was he said he was so fast, and she says, was he faster than you? And he goes, faster. You
know? Exactly, and it's that realization, and that would have been a really great element, especially as this film took off and became this incredible revenge tale, because if the stakes had have kept going up and up and up, as these characters get more and more wiped out and they all start to conglomerate together like good revenge tales do, you end up with this massive shootout at the end. And to have this other character, which is this sidelined, you know, sort of person that will come out of nowhere and cause even more chaos, would have been amazing. But then it started getting religious on us. And I didn't mind the scenes themselves, but the film had fallen apart by that to the point where I was just like, I have no idea.
That's right. Like the dramatic scene, you see a little bit in the trailer, the dramatic scene between him and the preacher.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Absolutely. Good. Well acted.
And well acted. Who cares by that point?
Yeah.
You know, the scenes between Billy Bob Thornton and Moon Bloodgood were interesting.
Yeah.
Who cares by that point? You know, and you're right. Carla Gugino, who I love as an actress, had nothing to do in this film. They introduce her character, and for the first 10 minutes, she's Basil Exposition, and then they go, okay, you're done.
Yeah, the exposition was probably the worst part of this film, where they actually, like, you didn't bother to try and incorporate it into the storyline or learn, you know, sort of maybe how to have videos or something, or like case files that they're reading out that kind of tell the story as we go along. To do it in one lump sum and have the recorded video? And
it's like, here's everything you need to know. In one, and do you know what? And that would have been fine if they had set that all up so that from that point onwards it was balls to the wall, nothing but action.
Yeah.
Because then we wouldn't have had to know anything else. We've set up the entire plot in the first 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And we set it all in motion. We go, now just gunplay. Right.
Yeah.
Problem is they didn't. They kept re-going back to it. And they kept explaining more. And kept trying to explain even more. And I don't care. Just kill somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
it was unfortunate because I'm not sure whether it was the trailer that set me up wrong or something like this, but I think by the end of it, you've just given up because it's got too dumb. Like, you've got great
dumb
characters.
Is the word.
Yeah, you've got great characters doing great work. You've got great action set pieces. You've got great setups. As I said to you, one of the most disappointing moments of this entire film is the fact that I get Dwayne The Rock Johnson at restless eyes in a room with Terry Tate, who is just a ginormous human being. He is just a troll, like 6-foot ogre. He is just so huge. They're in a bathroom. The door is locked. There's about to be a fight going on.
Well, they both draw knives, you know?
And you're just like, this is going to be amazing. And then it's 3 stabs and the whole thing's done. And you're just like...
And then it gets all apologetic.
Yeah.
And then there's this soft moment, please, my son, call my son, blah. It's like... I don't want all this. Yeah. You know, it's like I wanted a massive They Live style 10 minute, so long it needed a real change in the middle of it fight where like True Lies, where the stalls were being ripped off their hinges.
Exactly, dude. You've got people that could lift each other up and just toss them through walls, like smash them through doors. Maybe have the scene flood out into the frickin' nightclub and have them beating up bouncers.
Yeah,
fucking
yeah.
Like, that's how you do an action scene.
Go crazy.
You don't go to a tiny little scene and then make it like the problem with the film is it was kind of like a morality tale.
And it promises more than it delivers.
Exactly.
All the way through it.
Yeah, and by the end of it you're just so disappointed that nothing's happened that when the twist comes that he just, you know, sort of as the end, sorry, I won't wreck that.
Yeah.
But as the film pans out in the final moments, you're just really upset because you're sitting there going, this is a perfectly great scene and these are perfectly well-developed characters. I just don't care. You got it right.
The problem is as well, I mean, because there's so much exposition throughout it, we've already worked that out as well, though. I mean, it's no great reveal at the end. We work it out a good 20 minutes before it happens, you know? If maybe not even sooner than that.
Well, so, if you're a regular film goer and you know, and you're the kind of person that automatically sets up plot points in your mind because you know how films work, then you will have guessed this movie in 10 minutes. So I don't think that.
And once again, the film is so dumb, there are times where I sit there and go, I don't think you actually tried to be too clever. Mm.
It's upsetting.
You tried to spell this out really early.
You know what it is? It's like a good action director sat down and tried to do more than an action film, and it's just like you should have stayed with what you knew.
Yeah.
And you would have had something good. Really disappointing. However, I do want to say that The Rock is back.
If
I didn't like this film, The Rock is back. As an action star, he is doing what he does best, and I really hope to God that he is our new Bruce Willis or Denzel Washington or whatever, and he rises up to the status of amazing action star, just mindless action films. Because
it's kind of the promise that we had of him when he was in things like The Rundown and stuff like that early on, where you go, he's going to be taking the mantle.
Yeah.
He's going to be the next big action star, and then it didn't pan out that way.
Mm.
And so hopefully maybe now we might get
the
big action star that we hope from him. Somebody said, is it made for the American market? I think that's actually kind of harsh. I think we need to give the Americans a lot more credit than that, considering...
Look, even Middle America will probably sit there and go, that could really have been a better film.
Judging by its reviews, people are basically saying it's an okay action film, but it's kind of middling.
My problem with it is that it's kind of like it's kind of like someone setting you up for something good and then telling you off at the end of it, because you actually feel like, as an action fan, when they get to the end of that film, they're kind of pointing directly at you and going, yeah, well, this is what would happen. And you're like, I don't care. I came here for a film, not for a real life tale. And it was just a huge letdown for me because I was really excited about this.
I actually say that if you want to see this film, I'd wait for rental, I'd wait for DVD. I'm not
going
to
It's definitely not going to be one of those ones that will end up in my action collection.
The only plus in this film is it wasn't post-converted to 3D. I guess that would be one way of looking at it. I actually...
That's a bit harsh.
I didn't think much of the film. I thought the first 20 minutes was great.
I would love to see somebody take the elements of that film and redo them. It's just recast The Rock... Dwayne Rock Johnson, whatever you want to call him, put him in a film that's revenge-based with no morality tale.
There's
a lot
of scope for good, for very good revenge films.
Yeah.
And it just seems that we don't do revenge films like we used to because, once again, we're so politically correct, it's almost like we have to give a moral on everything.
But, Dave, we have something coming that may just kind of cleanse the taste.
Yeah.
We have The Mechanic coming.
That's true. And The Mechanic is actually getting good reviews, too. So I am curious. Is it better than The Last Airbender? My cat's crap is better than The Last Airbender.
But yeah, no. Understand, man. The actual first 20 minutes. It's a bit... you guys are talking a lot in the chat room about Smoking Aces. For me, it's a bit like the setup for Smoking Aces. I actually think the first 20 minutes of the film are actually better than the entire film. And it's that kind of situation where it's like, if you watch that 20 minutes, you'll be like, that was worthwhile. Like, that was a piece of cinema I will keep, but I'm really disappointed it wasn't a good film.
As I said to Josh when we came out, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was more than watchable. You know, but you just sit there and look at it and go, it had potential to be the next great action film.
Yeah.
And it just lets itself down completely. Yeah. And I'm going to say,
That's the problem. There is so much potential in that first 20 minutes. You're so captivated, and then it just lets you down.
It just lets you down completely. That's the problem. Anyway, so my opinion is, my verdict is, wait for DVD. Have a look at it. See what you think. There are some good set pieces in it. Good car chase in it. I just think overall, I think it's not worth the cinema dollars for this one. I think
rent it on iTunes.
Yeah, there you go.
$4. It'll be the most you'll ever want to spend on it.
Yeah, so it'll be on iTunes. Probably my prediction by May. Yeah. I don't think it's going to take long to get there. Okay, let's move on to some entertainment buzz. We got some news. A new female cast member is being cast for the Marvel Universe. Now, this is a very interesting piece because Samuel L. Jackson had already reported that he is not in Thor as Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Now, in an interview, he has said that he has had to shoot a day for Thor.
Yeah.
So Nick Fury is now going to appear in Thor and Captain America. He's got one day on each of these films. So it's probably like a post-credit sequence or something like that. And he's with a female companion.
Yeah.
And they're now casting for that female companion. So this is, of course, has set the internet alight as to who is the female companion. Because they haven't actually said who it is. The one theory is it's Janet Pym, the Wasp.
Yeah, yeah.
Another opinion is that it might be that S.H.I.E.L.D. officer who always follows Nick Fury around in the comic books. I forget what her name is off the top of my head. We have the article right here. And they've actually, there's a short list for the actresses. They look
waspy. I'm just going to say,
they all look like they could be a wasp. The short list at this point is Marina Baccarin, who is from Firefly and V. She played the space hooker in Firefly.
Yeah, I know.
I love Marina Baccarin. The choice of Mary Elizabeth Winstead from Scott Pilgrim, who played Ramona. Jessica Lucas from Cloverfield. And Kobe Smulders, who is from How I Met Your Mother. Robin from How I Met Your Mother.
I would actually say out of that, I would actually go with Marina. Because I think out of all the things, she is the most wasp-like.
Now, if it is Wasp,
yep.
Marina Baccarin is Wasp.
Yep, absolutely.
Perfect casting. Yep. Now, the other thing is, there's an inside track here, because whoever this character is going to have to be in The Avengers.
Yeah.
And The Avengers is directed by Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
Marina Baccarin has worked with Joss Whedon. So
yeah.
I think, now the update on this, of course, is that Mary Elizabeth Winstead has said she's not in the running. She's pulled out. So the Ramona Scott Pilgrim girl, she's got other things on. So if it's out of the other three, I'm going Marina Baccarin. My question is, who the hell is the character?
Yeah.
We are still waiting to find out.
We'll update when
we find out what character it is they're actually casting for, but my hope is it's Wasp.
Yeah.
The Avengers need more females.
Yeah.
Because at the moment there's only Black Widow, which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Now, I thought we'd also talk about Red State. We also have some feedback on Red State.
Yeah.
We talked about Red State last week and Kevin Smith's big announcements and all those things that he did about selling his own films. And there was actually one blog I read that wrote, the only problem with Kevin Smith not having a studio behind him is the fact that he's left to his own devices. And one of the criticisms of the film is that there is a speech in it by the main star that goes on for 20 minutes. And they said it actually drags a little bit at one point. Now, I don't know about you, but I could watch Michael Parks do a speech for 20 minutes easy.
Yeah.
And so could Kevin Smith. And so, but the thought was, if there's no studio to force cuts onto him, this film could suffer for that. Well, Kevin Smith is actually big enough to know these things. And according to an article I read, he said that after listening to the feedback from Sundance, he is going to go in and recut Red State. He's going to shave some of that speech out of Red State. And so he's a grown-up, guys. He knows how to make a film, you know?
Yeah.
And he is aware of what's going on. So, yes, Red State, when it comes out, will be trimmed and tightened up. And it's like he's had his preview audience now, so he can go on. Now, we do have some feedback. Now, we were going to leave feedback to the end of the show, but I thought we'd do feedback right now. Well, just a couple of them, because two of them are actually about Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
And considering we're just doing Kevin Smith's story, it says here, first of all, James from Melbourne wrote this. Now, I got to tell you, James, I completely disagree with everything you say, and I'll tell you why, all right? Let's read this first. It says, "Dear Dave, the evolution of the business plan for selling a movie is just that, an evolution. The large sums of advertising money was required to sell movies that has a high price tag, which is what viewers demanded. How good would Transformers be if it was claymation, as an example? So the business deals are driven by our demand. Smith wants to change this, and for his money, for his movie, it may work. It only cost a few million. Even in DVD sales to his fans, he will get his money. But do we as viewers want this type of film all the time? Do we want an endless stream of Blair Witch? Hell no. I want special effects, overpriced stars. I want visual feast that delights my senses. Smith isn't going to change the world with his plan, and the fact that he organized an auction and knowing full well 4 days into shooting, as he says, he jerked everyone around, is probably going to burn all his bridges and everyone involved in the film. He asked for more money for a show that he says costs less. Is that fair for the viewers he says he is all about? Seems he has his own concerns at heart. This movie will make the money he needs, but it will change nothing. Cause it's about what I want, not what directors, writers, and producers want. Sincerely, James from Melbourne. Now, James, before you go on, I think I'm probably going to say exactly the same thing, Josh, which is, first of all, let's address a couple of points here. First of all, he is not trying to change the industry. He has said that many times. He is not trying to stop blockbusters from happening. He, in fact, says he likes going to watch blockbusters. What he is trying to do is trying to find a different way of putting out small films, indie films, right?
Yeah.
He has no interest in trying to change the blockbuster market. As he said, he likes going to see blockbuster markets. Second thing here is he's saying, but, you know, if we do this, do we want to see this film all the time? Of course not. This is not the sort of film we're going to watch all the time. This is one kind of film that we could watch. And third thing I want to say, and then I'm going to throw it over to you, which is, who's to say $100 million gets you a better film? You can have huge special effects and a huge blockbuster special effects extravaganza for a very low price tag. Did you see District 9? District 9 costs $30 million as opposed to Transformers 2's $170 million. And I would take District 9 17 times over Transformers 2 any day of the week. Josh?
Well, look, I would like to finish adding to that point by saying another perfect example is Monsters. Look, I mean, as we said, it wasn't a particularly amazing film, but huge, ginormous set pieces and amazing special effects, and that was done on a dude's computer. Realistically, there are plenty of ways to do this sort of things, and I think we've forgotten that. But more importantly, on the first point that we were saying in this article where he was saying, about, yeah, it sells based on viewers' demand and evolution. My whole problem with that concept, man, is that when you're talking about indie films, like we are talking about, the problem is that the industry has always controlled the indie film. It's like these people know that they have to go to a publisher to get this, and even if it is an indie publisher, they still have the same rules that every one of these other companies come from. Australia is a perfect example of this. Your films will always look exactly the same and will always be exactly the same because realistically, we have such a closed mind in Australia. We have no other options here other than, oh, well, you don't have a star from Neighbours in it. You don't have the Australian film funding behind it. You don't have this, so therefore your film needs these components before we even look at it. And the problem with that is I've had friends that have tried to go ahead with projects that are really smart, like really interesting little films. Before zombies became this mainstream thing, they wanted to do a really different take on zombie films. They applied for funding. They couldn't get it because the film industry said, we don't like what you have to say. We need options for these people because these are the films like Sam Raimi's Evil Dead all the way back in the day, which is now considered by geeks one of the greatest, you know, films of its kind, was on a ridiculously low budget. And this film still managed to make it out, even though it had to fight every single step of the way. These are the people we're trying to help. We're not trying to change anything at the top end. We're excited for change at the bottom end. And I think that's really what I, at least,
look,
am trying to get across with this.
Nothing is going to change the way studios make movies.
Yeah.
What Kevin Smith is basically saying is he's released 11 films the studio way. What's wrong with trying something different?
Yes, you know? But look, we know this, James, and realistically, your film isn't going to survive if it's on a low budget. Yes, the worst films can be low budget as well, but those are the ones that sit in the bottom of the thing and don't do anything.
What was the worst film of 2010? The worst. I would argue.
I would say it was probably
The Last Airbender.
Yeah, and
what was the budget of Last Airbender?
$150 million. Yeah, $50 million, maybe. Yeah, it's like, look. But at the same end, what we're saying, James, is that some of the most expensive films can also be pieces of shit as well. The funding of a film doesn't change it, but we need options for people that want to create something that may step outside the simple mind scope of the basic area of cinema.
Sam Raimi, Celine, before she left, before the beginning of the show, Celine reminded us of a quote that we talked about a while ago. Sam Raimi, who of course has now gone on to do things like Spider-Man and stuff, but prior to doing the big budget films, had actually said one point, sorry, Octane just said, G.I. Joe, anyone? Sorry, $150 million for The Last Airbender. Sam Raimi had basically said he didn't want big budgets. Sam Raimi said that he lost his creativity when he was given more money, which meant more toys to play with.
Yeah.
He said he was much more creative as a filmmaker when he had no money to work with. And that's such a very valid thing to say. And I'm not saying we only want to do low-budget films. I love a big blockbuster just like everybody else. But we also want a whole new breed of filmmakers to come through. We need fresh blood constantly. And that new breed of filmmakers won't come into the system if there is only a studio system. We need an independent circuit. We wouldn't have a Bryan Singer if it wasn't for Usual Suspects. We wouldn't have a Steven Spielberg if it wasn't for Sugarland Express or some of his early stuff. We wouldn't have a George Lucas if it hadn't been for Francis Ford Coppola and his Zoetrope Studio independent label way back when. So you look at it and go, all these people start somewhere. Very rarely do they just get spewed out into the big budget
about,
realm.
Like, you talk quite regularly about the sort of the birthing of things like The Thing and stuff like that, back when these companies were just starting to form and these people were just starting to work together. We're just talking about that. We're just talking about, we live in a society now of industry titans. We live with these giant, like, bosses already established. This isn't back in the 50s and 60s and 70s where film companies were growing and starting out. Like, to create, for Kevin Smith to branch off and create a geek-based section of film which is being funded and produced by the exact kind of people that would actually want to go see these kinds of films just means an avenue for a whole lot of new films that are too geeky or that don't hit mainstream society. And look, I just think that's an incredibly good thing.
It's an amazing experiment. I'm actually very excited about it. And I think that if you have the clout that Kevin Smith has, Kevin Smith pulls 300,000 plus downloads per podcast episode. He's got a huge audience. He's trying something different. The other point that he made in his email, James from Melbourne said, he wants to do these overpriced tickets. Let's be very clear. You've got to be very clear before you put out an argument that you actually look at all the facts. He's not just charging an overpriced ticket for a movie. It is a 12-day tour where he is taking it. He's four-walling cinemas. He's hiring the cinema. He's inviting you to come for a live show where he does a Q&A, which he already does at the moment, and you're probably already going to pay $40-odd dollars for a ticket to one of his Q&As. And he's giving you a film as well. So he's putting the film on with a live show. After that is over, that tour is over, the film in October will be released into normal cinemas at normal prices.
So possibly even less
possibly
if everything
less,
goes through.
On how he negotiates it, right? And so the point is that if you don't want to pay to see the live Q&A with Kevin Smith after you have seen the movie, then wait and you will see it in the normal cinemas at normal prices.
Okay, well,
So that's it. Now, if you want more details, we're going to have to leave Kevin Smith alone for a while. Oh, no, wait, I actually have a counterpoint. We'll just do this really quickly. I don't want to do the whole letter. Tristan, I'm sorry, I want... Damn.
Oh my God, now we're getting
wind.
Wind's
blowing up. Sorry, we got all the windows open. The wind is blowing up. I wanted to read your whole...
Wow. I'm just going to go get that.
We've got a storm blowing up here, guys. It's like Key Largo. All right. I just want to address a couple of points very quickly. I'm going to paraphrase your email greatly, Tristan. I apologize. It's just we're going to be running out of time. He said he listened to the Film Actually podcast today and was very interested in discussion about Kevin Smith. Okay. He says, I'll try to make the chat room, which he did. So, Tristan, I'm very happy you're here. He says, film companies rule the movie industry with an iron fist and don't allow for any movement or change. As Josh was saying, journalists have lost their jobs for dissing games or a movie or any other media that is released that deserves criticism, whether it's good or bad, right? He's saying if companies in general don't want to hear something bad being said about their movies, games, TV shows, etc., then maybe they should really start looking at releasing quality over quantity. I look at a lot of reviews and papers online, etc., and take them to... sorry, your text is very small on this thing. Take them with a grain of salt, because the amount of time I've seen a good review and the movie has been absolutely terrible makes me wonder whether some of these people have actually seen the movie, right? Because you know what? I've actually seen this, guys. We go to press screenings. We're given press kits. And then you read the reviews, and they've actually just highlighted sections out of the press kit.
They're just taking
it straight out of the press kit. It's terrible. Anyway, I don't want to go harp on this too much, but basically he's saying, good on you, Kevin Smith. It's time that we have a look at some new ideas, some fresh ideas. It's not necessarily going to change the industry, but it's worth an experiment to see if we can try and make some different choices. And that's really what it comes down to. We have one other email, but we'll read it a little bit later on in a feedback section at the end, because it's actually not about – I don't think it's actually about Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
No, we'll come back to that one. All right, so we'll come back to that one at the end of the show. All right, so that's basically it with the Kevin Smith thing. I do want to put a recommendation out to you. If you at all want to hear what Kevin Smith has to say about any of this, go and have a listen to the Smodcast. Now, this is his original podcast that's still on the network. Him and Scott Mosier do it. The last episode is not a crazy one. It's not them making lots of jokes like they normally do. It's him and Scott Mosier talking about the heat and the flack that he has gotten over this.
So the last episode was the one that you were saying.
That's right,
really
the most recent episode of Smodcast. Download it, have a listen to it, and you'll hear a very heartfelt Kevin Smith talking about how he feels about all this flack that's come his way. It's very, very interesting to listen to, and I would be very interested to hear your thoughts on it. Okay? Let's move out of Kevin Smith land, though, because it is hot, and we're going to keep moving the show right along. But it's always an interesting debate. Now, we have a trailer that I want to show you. This film has come out of nowhere. Apparently, according to the Slash Film website, they actually did talk about it about a year ago. I think it was Sundance like a year ago, where they said this was one of the most interesting films that they had seen, or the editor-in-chief of Slash Film had seen, and it disappeared, right? And now it looks like it's finally getting released. And it's funny, the tie-in I was saying before, it stars Giacchino from Faster, all right? And this is where she is actually the star of the film. The film is called Electrolux. And tell me if this is not one of the odder things you've seen in a while.
Hey, I'm Bert Rodriguez, sex blogger. One performer stands taller than the rest. Electrolux.
Am I interrupting something?
Yeah. All the acclaim. The high-profile affair with late rock star Nick Chappell. But Electrolux's sudden retirement from the adult film industry defined the end of an era.
I heard you quit the biz.
I'm pregnant.
Oh, my God. I'm so thrilled. Is it yours? You're teaching at a commune?
I teach at a community center. Chapter 2, How to Seduce Just About Anything That Moves. Group leader Stacy taught me to share.
Ms. Lux, I need to speak to you about Nick Chappell. You heard about the briefcase Nick was carrying.
Oh, the songs are about you.
Nobody's ever written a song about me before. How can I ever pay you back?
I need you to seduce my fiancé.
Excuse me? Hey, this is not my fiancé.
I am a private detective. I was hired by the band to find the missing lyrics.
How was your day?
Disaster.
Sex, drugs, murder?
No drugs involved.
Once again, you are tuned into the frequency of the erotic.
Are you a little flustered?
just a little clammy, maybe.
Life is fleeting. And if today is the day you want to be bad, why not be real bad? It's not bad form to look him straight in the eye and say, I don't know where I'm going, but if you move, I will kill you.
So can we do this again sometime?
I don't know. I mean, you talk a lot.
I don't have to.
It won every major award, including 2 Best Actress statuettes for Miss Lux. Mom, please, not now, please!
Mom, please, not now!
Oh, dude.
Odd. Is all I can say.
I'm in, though. I'll watch that. That looks kind of cool. Yeah, no.
James Momoa says, wow, I've never been so unenthused about a film. I watch that trailer and I go, yeah, I look at the trailer and I go, that looks kind of weird, kind of fun.
But, you know? Like, I mean, it has that kind of, like, no-budget kind of a film feeling to
it.
Yeah,
it does.
So it feels very independent. And
was that Josh Brolin in that picture, though?
I think so,
yeah. So we've got Josh Brolin, we've got Carla Gugino, who I love, we've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who I love, we've got Timothy Oliphant, was it?
Timothy Oliphant, and it's around and based around the porn industry. I'm totally
in. I'm in, man!
Like, that's all I need.
What's not to like about this film? I'm in. Joseph Gordon-Levitt also makes another piece of our news today, which, of course, is he is now circling a role in The Dark Knight. Now, this was rumored at before, but it looks like he is now in talks for a role in The Dark Knight. Nobody knows as what, but we have to take a grain of salt on this because there was a lot of talk at one point, speculation, that he would play the Riddler. But a few months ago, we had Christopher Nolan say, Riddler will not be in this movie. So, what the hell?
He'll find a spot for him. You know, dude, this is exactly the same as people like James Cameron reusing Bill Paxton. I mean, it just happens.
Yeah,
you find an actor and you're like, you're just going to do what I need you to do. So just get
just
in.
Just be in it.
Yeah. Just show up. I'll find something for you to do.
Is this the movie that was meant to be a Linda Lovelace biography? No, that movie is called Inferno. That's on hold.
And I don't think that's going to be as funny.
No, I think that's a drama. This is a comedy.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to this one. I think it's kind of fun. So we don't know if Joseph Gordon-Levitt is playing in Dark Knight, but it looks like he is circling a role for that one. And not in the show notes, but just a very quick one, because we have a Stephen King story, which is it looks like The Stand is finally going to be brought to the big screen. Now, The Stand is a great book. It's probably one of the greatest Stephen King books. It was turned into a miniseries a few years ago, like a six-hour miniseries. The book is enormous.
Yeah.
How they'll actually make this into a feature film, I don't know. But it looks like it is actually finally going to go ahead for the big screen, which would be awesome. But I also found out, just after I finished putting the show notes to bed, that they're talking about remaking Pet Sematary.
Yeah. I had heard the same thing that Selena heard about the film, which is the Viggo. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is the Viggo might be in it. Didn't that guy retire again recently?
He retires. He's like the Daniel Day-Lewis. They keep going off and saying, I'm not doing any more films. And then Daniel Day-Lewis goes off to Italy and becomes a shoe cobbler. And then every now and again he goes, oh, yeah, I'll do that film. Comes out and then goes back to making shoes again.
Dude, that's like the ultimate life in the world. It's just like, you know, you make bazillions of dollars from what you do. And then just like, you know, I'll take a movie.
I'm going to go make shoes.
Yeah, I need a new car. Get me a film.
It's kind of like Michael Caine, many years, has said that he does some films because he loves them.
Yeah, yeah.
He does
and
other
some
films because he's building his house.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know? That's awesome.
Somebody, Selena said, might it be a miniseries? No, they're actually talking about a feature film. They're actually talking about turning it into a feature film. I don't know about Pet Sematary. I believe that's just a remake feature film as well.
Yeah.
So, once again, we'll wait and see. Stephen King's hot at the moment, though. They seem to really be back. He kind of cooled off for a while, but he's really becoming back with a strong feeling at the moment. So we'll see what happens. Now, Superman, the Man of Steel. That is the working title at this point in time. There's been movement all over the place this week on this film. First of all, Henry Cavill, and for those who don't know who Henry Cavill is, he was the star of the Showtime series, The Tudors, amongst other things, has been cast as Superman. And if you go to the website, geekactually.com, we have a picture of him. You can have a look at him there. So he has been cast.
Yeah.
Now the movement is in the next direction, which is, Who's Lois? We now have to find an actor who can actually work against James Cavill. Okay, so the question was, who would you play? Now, there is a short list that came out. Now, the short list has Jessica Biel, has Rachel McAdams. It has, now, what's her name? Agron. Diane Agron? Is that what her name is? What is her goddamn name? I've forgotten her name now. She plays the cheerleader in Glee. Her last name is Agron. I forget what her first name is now. Malin Ackerman was another name that was thrown around. And the one, and I don't even know if I can say this, because last time I tried to, I got this little gag of vomit in the back of my head. But Kristen Stewart.
But
the good news is, a day after this list came out, Kristen Stewart actually withdrew. She withdrew herself from this role. By the way, that girl's name is Diana Agron. Yes. She actually withdrew, saying, and I shit you not, She actually withdrew by saying, I didn't know how successful Twilight was going to be, and now it's been really successful. I just don't know if I want to be in another really successful franchise because, you know, it's just, it's not what I like. I want to go back and do slightly more independent stuff.
Shut up.
I'm sorry. What is the side effect of being in movies? It's called fame.
Yeah.
Deal with it. You're in the wrong goddamn profession, girl. She actually
said... Runaways is a huge success. Thank you, who's saying she was great in The Runaways.
She was great, you know?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, realistically, that movie gave you just as much fame. It just gave you a whole different world of people.
Mm.
Okay?
And as I said about The Runaways, I actually wrote an article...
Don't worry. You're not in any sort of circles going to be accepted into the geek culture. You will be a part of the film and then leave the film. And we won't think... No, never mind about you. So feel free to be in the film because it's not going to change your stance.
Okay, so...
Geeks don't like you.
I shit you not when I actually tell you that one of her quotes... now, if you go to geekactually.com, I put up an opinion piece about this. Yeah. Well, one of her quotes was, she doesn't like doing interviews because they make her smell bad and her palms sweat. So Kristen Stewart, you're a
long
job. And I actually said in the article, I said I liked her in Runaways, but Runaways was a perfect example of the role was right for her. Okay.
I love Kellison's line, which is a side effect of being in Twilight is death threats.
Now, according to the ain'titcoolnews.com article about all this, apparently Jessica Biel is the front runner. Mm-hmm. I personally think out of that list, Rachel McAdams is the best choice out of that list. That's my personal choice. You want somebody, the Lois Lane prerequisites, strong, spunky, sassy, with it, you know? And Rachel McAdams is the only one out of that list that fits all of that criteria, you know?
I'm sorry, Beale's lost a lot of respect from me lately, so I just don't care. I don't want her in the film.
But they're all pretty girls instead of acting ones. And this is another thing about Rachel McAdams is she is pretty, but she can actually act, which is a plus in her favor. Now, there's been a second list. Now, this isn't in the show notes, Josh. This came up this morning. Mm. This one actually, I've got it on the email here. It was actually from First Showing, I think it is. And we'll just chat amongst yourselves for a second while I find this email because I just remembered this. I woke up this morning to a couple of emails. One email was basically saying that we no longer have any IPv4 addresses.
Do you want to play that while you're looking for it?
Which one, sorry? No, oh, I was going to finish off the news, but we could play that. I've actually got it here, but we could play that now. It's right here. I said it's right here, and of course it's not right here. Where the hell is it?
It's not right there.
It was. Oh, here it is. First show. Here it is. Another short list came up. And I'm very intrigued about this. Come on, follow the link. Follow the link, you iPad. Here it is. Diane Kruger, Rosamund Pike, and Alice Eve might fly with Superman is their article. And basically it says here that Alice Eve was from She's Out of My League. Diane Kruger, of course, is in Glorious Bastards. Rosamund Pike is from Surrogates. And they're now basically saying that this is not a role. This is not Lois Lane. This is some other female lead, and these are short lists. So everybody started to go, who? Who the hell? What the hell is this list? And where did this come from? And there's now speculation as this might be for Lana Lang.
Ah.
And that would actually give indication that there might be an origin story, because Lana Lang was a Smallville character. So are we going back and doing another goddamn origin story? Are we doing it again?
Let's start over.
Let's start it again. Anyway, so it looks like we've got another female casting setup, and I haven't read about that because that literally came through this morning. So, all right, just to finish off film news today, please send your opinions as to the Superman casting. We'd love to hear from you. My personal opinion, and I put this in the article, I would have cast Brandon Routh as Superman. I would have brought him back. He was not the problem with Superman Returns.
He was awesome.
He was great. So I would cast him, and then as the female Lois to this, and this is going to be controversial for those who don't watch it or haven't watched it for a long time. I know a lot of people bailed out. I would cast Erica Durance, the girl who plays Lois in Smallville, because she has grown into that role, and she fits that category. Smart, sassy, strong, kicks ass, and pretty, and she would look good next to Brandon Routh, you know? And you cast those two in this new Superman film. That's a Superman film I would go see.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, what can I say? I'm not making the film. Zack Snyder is. And, you know, he obviously knows what he's doing because his last movie was about talking owls.
So anyway, let's not talk about what I think of Zack Snyder at the moment.
All right, so here is a little clip. Now, for all of you out there who know us, Social Network was one of our favorite films of last year. And we thought Jesse Eisenberg was brilliant in the role. And apparently Jesse Eisenberg has never met Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Well, on Saturday Night Live this week, they met for the first time. And all I can say is, awkward. So here you go. Here's a clip from Saturday Night Live of Jesse Eisenberg meeting Mark Zuckerberg for the first time.
We're going to let you in on the joke. This isn't Mark Zuckerberg. This is Andy Samberg.
Yes, and thank you. May I say, Jesse, that I loved your Zuckerberg. How do you do yours?
Oh, thank you. I speak in short, clipped sentences, and I keep my head very still like this. But I love yours, actually. So what is your technique?
Oh, well, I wear this sweatshirt. And then I say, I'm Mark Zuckerberg.
Straightforward. And of course, I wasn't really doing Mark Zuckerberg. I was interpreting a fictional character in a movie script.
You know, Jesse, I don't know if it came off.
Hi. Thank you for coming here.
Wait. Have you two not met?
No.
Zuckerberg. Well, I'll be going Samberg out.
Okay. So. Yeah. It's good. I really, really, really like John 60 Minutes.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You ever end up seeing the film that? The Social Network?
Yeah, I did.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, thanks. What did you think?
It was interesting.
Interesting. I'll take it. Thank you. Great. Why don't we do this together? You go first.
All right, awesome. Cool. We've got a great show for you tonight. Nicki Minaj is here.
Right. So stick around, we'll be right back.
So anyway,
it's a shitload better. I'm sorry, but that is a shitload better. This from the man that melted on a couch.
That's true.
Like, I'm sorry, but that is an impressive step upwards.
Melted on a couch
to that. He stood up there. He did an all right job. His job was to make the situation seem awkward. Boom. Yeah. No problem there. And second of all, I actually think the kind of thing is, mildly funny. It doesn't.
I just love that one clip where Sandberg says to Jesse Eisenberg, "So how did you play your Zuckerberg?" He goes, "I just kept my head very stiff and talked in clip sentences." That was wonderful.
Wow. Awkward.
Oh,
I love
there you
that.
Go. Our chat room is still going on about budgets. Social Network, $40 million budget. There you go.
Yes. No. That was a great film.
So, it was a great film, and Jesse Eisenberg did a great job in it. And
we're trying to catch up on the chat room. That's why we all went quiet for a second there. All these messages about stuff that we weren't paying attention to.
Yeah. We should continue the Superman movie curse thing and get Lindsay Lohan. Oh, yeah. Dear. Calisynth, not a good choice. Although, Lindsay Lohan would be a good young Lana Lang. Redhead.
Yeah. Before the drugs.
Before the drugs, that's right. It could be Lana Lang on drugs. Should be a public service announcement.
No. So anyway.
Somebody mentioned the Linda Lovelace film. I should mention, I think we mentioned it on the show once before, but I can never remember what we talk about. Just very quickly, though, you do realize that, I think I mentioned this before, Lindsay Lohan has been fired from the Linda Lovelace.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan has been fired from the Linda Lovelace. Yes.
Yeah, we covered that.
She was uninsurable. Uninsurable. Because of all of the being booked and charged and everything else that happened. So it's a real shame, because I think that would have been the film to kind of help her. But anyway, burn your bridges. That's what happens. So,
no.
Okay, let's move on to a list of five. Oh, should we do a list of five, or should we do this email first? Let's do the email first.
Let's get it out of the way. We'll finish with the.
We have
list
one more
fives.
Email, and this is from Chris.
Organization is not our strong point, viewers.
Who wants to be organized? Organized is for losers. All right. Now, Chris has sent us a very wonderful email. He's from New South Wales, and I think this is the first time he's ever written to us. And I just wanted to say he's a very long email, and the first part of it is all congratulatory, and we're not going to read it all. I do want to point out.
Well, thanks for your congratulations,
thank you
though,
so
man.
Much.
Yeah,
it's
no,
wonderful.
It's like seriously, you have no idea how much. It helps us.
The only part I'm going to read is where he says he's been listening to Film Spotting podcast for a long time and yearning for something different, searched for a couple hours, found us, and likes us.
Yeah.
And all I can say is, win.
Yeah, no, it feels really good to get these kind of emails because, like, you know, we don't get paid. So when we hear these things, it reminds us of why we do it.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much.
So with all that part aside, he does bring this one paragraph. And this is the paragraph I thought we should just bring in very quickly, where he basically says, one thing eludes me. He's talked about being a huge film fan. All right. Goes through his all his creds about being a film fan, and they're very impressive. Okay.
Yeah.
And I do want to know how you got that Netflix account, so send me another email. All right. He says, one thing eludes me, though, and he says, and that is why does Scott Pilgrim get so much love? Okay. Don't get this wrong in assuming I'm the wrong demographic for the film. Quite the opposite. I'm a longtime gamer back to the days of the C64. I love Michael Cera. I'm a huge fan of Edgar Wright's body of work, Shaun of the Dead in particular, and I almost always enjoy films that do things a little differently by marching to a different beat. But I have to confess, I just can't enjoy anything about the film. The characters seem one-dimensional. The story is unengaging. The visuals, whilst occasionally surprising, don't interest me, and the whole film just leaves me flat. You have given the film a lot of love recently, and as have many others, and I just don't get it. I like having fun with films as much as the next person. I almost like Charlie's Angels films. I find nothing fun about Scott Pilgrim. Keep up the great work. Chris, this is actually one of those points that we bring up a lot on the show, which is film is completely subjective.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you're not alone. There are a lot of people who didn't get Scott Pilgrim. This is why it bombed at the box office. Literally, just died at the box office. So I would have to just say that there's nothing strange about not liking Scott Pilgrim. It's something that tickled me about the film. I think it actually tickled Josh even more about the film. So there's different levels and different degrees. And there are people out there who don't like it.
What it is to me is that I think you really
James have... James from Melbourne said, some people like Step Up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, past the film is subjective thing. If you want to try and find something to hold on to in that film, it is a celebration of what is geek.
Yeah.
All right? And, like, I mean, people can argue backwards and forwards over whether or not they feel that that is supported in this role. But, again, it's the subjective thing that will sway you one way or the other. The reality is, though, it is celebration of 8-bit. It is celebration of video games. It is celebration of...
Indie music. Celebration of... I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's everything that is current, trendy geek.
Now, there was actually a pie chart made, I forget what they're called, those sort of charts where they all overlap each other. I forget there's a name for them. Somebody did one, though, which was about levels of geek, nerd, so forth. And Josh and I had this conversation when it came out. We said, in the middle of that chart, there's this one very small area which was like pure geek, where everything overlapped.
Yeah.
And we said, that's the demographic for Scott Pilgrim. It's a really small target.
Yeah. You know? It's a small hole you have to hit, and if you're not part of every aspect of it, you miss.
Venn diagram. Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, no. So I completely understand that you don't like it. I do know people that didn't like it. It's one of those things where it's...
Yeah, we've already had a chat room. Callison that said, I agree with the email. Scott Pilgrim wasn't enjoyable for me. So that's fine. Yeah. We've had Northy say, I love Scott Pilgrim. So, and this is the thing. It's a really... I think Scott Pilgrim is a really hit and miss film in the sense that if you get it, if you're there for the ride, if you love it, you just accept it for what it is. And I really enjoyed it. And I, in fact, it's funny because when I came out of the cinema... I said it's the best video game film ever made about that it wasn't based on a video game, you know? And I enjoyed it. But I didn't have the same level of love as some of the other people who saw it with us. And then Shane, who used to be on our Tech Action show all the time, Shane didn't like it very much. He didn't get it, you know? And so I think it is really a subjective thing. And just because some people love one film doesn't necessarily make that a great film or a bad film or what have you. It's such a subjective thing, you know? Anyway, so I just thought I'd bring that up. Oh, that's the wrong list.
That's the wrong list. I was looking at going, the secretary? Really? The revenge list. Film?
No, this is the other list.
Yeah.
So I would actually say that a great email, and there, everybody is entitled to their own opinion in every way, shape, or form. My son, by the way, thought Scott Pilgrim was the bee's knees.
He just thought
it was the best thing ever. He wants to watch it again. So go figure. All right. We're going to move into our list of five. This list of five is to celebrate Faster, which is a revenge film. So we thought, well, easy topic. Yeah. We will do a list of five revenge films.
Oh, dude, especially for me, man. That like Marin, these are my bread and butter films, man. I was just like, where do I start?
So I actually found the list a little bit challenging. I sat there, because I sat there going, there's lots of great films about revenge, but what are they really great films?
Oh, dude, I've got my best of the best. So the creme de la creme of the films.
I have a few honorary mentions on this one. And I also have to say that my number one, it goes against everything these lists are about. Yep. My number one is actually a tie. Mm. So there are two films on my number one, but you'll see why. There is a reason for that.
Yeah.
They are kind of related to each other. Anyway, let's move on. What's your number five?
My number five is actually one which might actually be higher up on your list, but my number five is the Kill Bill saga. If I had to choose between the two of them, it would be Kill Bill 2 would be my favorite out of the two. I am a huge fan of the Japanese style that he went for in the first one, but I think the Westerns just really hold the revenge system so much tighter.
And we are still waiting, to this day, we are still waiting for the four-hour chronological cut.
Yeah.
It's coming. He keeps promising it to us. There is apparently a full one-film version of this film cut into a different chronological order. So we're still waiting for it. We'll see what happens. It is higher on my list, so I'll reserve.
Yeah,
comment.
Exactly. I knew it would be, so I was leaving that one very, very small. Look, we've all seen it. You either like it or you don't like it. So let's just leave that one. We'll talk about it later when we get to it on yours. Number five.
My number five is actually from last week's list.
Yeah.
It's made research again, which is, of course, Unforgiven.
Yeah.
The Clint Eastwood Western, which doesn't start as a revenge film, but sure as hell fucking ends as one. All right. And it's cold and it's calculated and it's brilliant. And I already talked a lot about it last week, so we won't go into a lot of detail. But I think that Unforgiven is a terrific film about revenge, as is a bunch of his Westerns.
Yeah.
But that's the one that stands out for me.
Yeah.
Your number four.
My number four is one that you have to think hard about to consider it a revenge film, but it is actually a film about revenge. There is a lot of other things to it, and it doesn't end as a normal revenge film does, but Leon, The Professional. Which
I didn't even consider it.
But the underlying thing behind the film is her line to get to
and
the guy.
Such a good film.
And, exactly. And great moments of revenge and that great kind of opening that
that's
you get.
She is training to get revenge. That's her whole purpose.
Yeah, so that's my number four.
My number four is also from the French Gaumont clan, which is Taken. 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
A visceral film about father getting revenge on everybody who dared touch his baby.
Yeah, and good on him. Look, I actually thought about it, but I had too many other good ones to choose.
That's
so
fair enough. Taken,
down.
Also, we've discussed on the show before, I like Taken more than you did, and I think one of those aspects is the fact that I'm a parent.
Yeah.
So it had a visceral...
Yeah,
it had a visceral feeling for me.
Oh, dude, if you could, you would do as much damage as he does.
If I had those, if I had his skills and Nikki was taken... Watch out. All right, you're number three.
My number three is Memento, which I think is one of the best revenge films
made.
Because, essentially you don't really realize it's a revenge film till the end of the film. And then the entire cycle starts and you just learn everything in this one glorious moment that you're just like, holy crap. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everyone knows how much of a Nolan fan I am.
Absolutely.
So,
no, actually, funnily enough, it didn't even occur to me once again.
Yeah.
I would have gone on my list had it occurred to me. My number three is one that is not about a person getting revenge, but more about a country getting revenge, which, of course, is Steven Spielberg's Munich.
Good choice.
Where Israel basically said, we can't act on this officially, so covertly we will get assassins and go out and kill the sons of bitches, you know? And Munich was a sensational film. And
Film
that a lot of Spielberg fans don't see. They don't watch. I don't know why. It's a... They don't want that film for some reason.
Yeah.
It's like they disown it.
It doesn't feel very Spielberg-y.
No, it doesn't. It's
and
dark.
And I love that. But that is one of the films that I think you should definitely stick in his list, because you should go, that was a step outside what he usually does.
Yes, absolutely. I think Munich is a terrific
film. Didn't think
film.
About it, but yeah, fantastic choice.
Your number two.
My number two is Old Boy, which I think...
I still haven't seen it.
Which is one
told
of...
so many good things about
oh,
it.
Oh, man, it is just an amazing story. I mean, like, Dave, I can set it up for you right now by just saying the following things. A guy who has no reason or explanation as to why this happened, gets locked in a room for 15 years, then gets let out.
Sounds a bit like Bad Boy Bubby.
Yeah, but you can understand the plot for revenge. The guy is driven in a way that you just cannot fathom as a normal person, because you just cannot understand what it would be like to be locked in a room for 15 years and then let out. And the entire rest of the film is just him trying to get revenge.
It's actually a slash film cast favorite. They talk about it all the time.
Dude, when you watch it, it will be one of those films
where you
just go... I
believe it's on my QuickFlix queue, so hopefully I'll get it soon, and I will see it. Because I've been hearing people talk about it for the last 12 months, and I keep going, I got to see this film. Got to see this film.
Yeah.
My number two is from 1979, and it's the original Mad Max. We all talk about the post-apocalyptic world of Mad Max 2 and Mad Max Beyond. We forget that Mad Max 1 is a really simple story of revenge. Mm. It is one cop who loses his family and then says, fuck it, and takes out the bikers who did it to him. And it is brutal and a great film. If you haven't seen the original Mad Max, go back and have a look at it now. It's low budget. Low budget, James. It's low budget, but it's a very, very effective film. Still works to this day. I think Mad Max 2 is actually a better film.
Yeah.
But Mad Max 1 is much more raw.
Get out. Get out, Zed. All right? Ultraviolet, get out. Just no. All right? Just no.
No.
That's it.
All right, you're number one.
My number one is, in my opinion, the best revenge film ever made. I mean this without question, and it is not the original. It is the remake of Cape Fear with Robert De Niro.
Yes.
It is one of the only films that when it finished with the group that I was sitting at, the credits rolled, someone pressed stop on the VCR player, he pressed stop, he put down the remote, and the only one that spoke in the room was me, and I just went, fuck me. That was my only comment at the end of that film. It is so brutal, and it is so well acted. Everyone in it is fantastic.
I'll actually go so far as to say that I think the original Cape Fear is also brilliant.
Oh, no.
They're both
absolutely
brilliant films.
But when I put them side by side, I just like... You want to know why? Because they could take it further.
Mm.
And that's the reason
Scorsese went into some very dark territory.
Exactly.
And it's funny because it's a film he didn't want to make.
Yeah.
He was talked into it. Spielberg had the rights. Spielberg was producing it. And he actually went to him and said, I want you to do this film. And he said, I've done that territory. I don't want to do this film. Yeah. Why would I want to do this film? It's too commercial. Blah. Spielberg talked him into doing it. And to this day, a lot of people talk about that film still.
Yeah.
So.
It's one of those films where you sit down and it's De Niro's performance because De Niro is so charming. And so wrong, and just he has rights to want revenge, but you can't endorse the reasons.
No, you can't because he's also crazy.
Exactly.
So and you're torn with his character.
And you've just got like a very young, what's her name?
Juliette Lewis.
And it's just, she was in that stage where you're just like, it's wrong.
It's wrong. Everything's wrong about you.
You're wrong.
Now, just as a throwback to our Geek Actually show, so if you listen to both shows, you'll know what we're talking about. But Zed has basically said to you, you want a game on a laptop, he gets to recommend Ultraviolet.
Fair enough.
Touche.
Yeah.
All right. So have a listen to Geek Action. You'll know what that's a reference to. Yes. No, I agree with you. I think it's a great film. Yes. No, terrific stuff.
Mm.
Very good. My number one is Kill Bill. I think Kill Bill 1 in particular probably represents just pure revenge.
Oh, yeah.
There is no story to Kill Bill 1. It is literally she's out for revenge and she's going to kill everything in her path.
I think Kill Bill 2 was going to come up.
Kill Bill 2 is a better film.
Yeah.
I think Kill Bill 2 is much more Tarantino. It's got better dialogue. It's got better characterization. But Kill Bill 1 is pure revenge.
Yeah.
In its simplest form, you know?
I was actually going to talk about this, and I was waiting until we got to this stage before I said it, but I think Faster would have benefited from being basically a cut-and-cop version of that.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
You had had
which is what I wanted from Faster.
Exactly. You wanted a 1970s shot, you know, big muscle cars, dude with a ginormous gun, rampaging across the city, killing everyone in his path. And that was all we needed. That's all we wanted.
We have a wasp in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at him fly around. Anyway, just wondering. Oh, it's right down in the mics. He's here. He's here.
Don't worry. It's fine. He'll just sit there.
He's right here on the microphone, guys.
Yeah, he's actually on the back of my mic, so no one breathe or talk too loudly. No one type in caps.
Oh, there he goes.
It's fine. They don't eat much. Oh, now he's flying over my leg. What? All right, fine. I'll kill him.
There you go.
Right, we'll finish the show.
And then we'll get rid of him.
Yeah.
All right, so he's trapped under a little lid there, guys.
We don't endorse violence against animals.
All right, so I guess we should have kind of expected a wasp to come in here eventually.
Yeah.
So
where were we?
Where I don't know. Kill Bill. Something about Kill Bill.
Wasps everywhere.
Wasps,
oh God.
Heat. Wasps. No, look. I think Kill Bill. And as I say, the film I wait for is I wait for the day that Tarantino recuts it into one cohesive film, because I think it would actually be a very interesting film all cut into one cohesive storyline.
Yeah.
Because at the moment they are such different films.
Yeah.
They feel so different to each other. And it would be nice to see what he originally intended. Because it was shot as one film and then chopped up at the Weinsteins' request, because they basically said, you can't release a four-hour movie. And so he cut it into two halves. And so it'd be really interesting to see what it would be like as that original cut. Mm-hmm. So, all right. I have a couple of honorary mentions that we could throw out here at this point. In doing some research on these films, of course, you sit there and go, Sam Peckinpah's Straw Dogs was an amazing revenge film, but very dated by today's standards. So why I didn't make it? Death Wish. The original Charles Bronson Death Wish, which was really the inspiration for that Jodie Foster film, The Brave One. But going back and rewatching Death Wish, which I did a few weeks ago, it is not actually a very good film. It's really poorly acted, and it's really poorly scripted, and it was really shocking in its day, but not so shocking today. Heathers, the comedy, is basically about revenge. I mean, you know, it's her and JD going out and killing all the popular kids for making them feel bad. And, of course, Stephen King's Carrie.
Yeah. The other one I want to add to that list is actually Death Sentence, which is the recent film. I've talked about it before. James Wan and Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yes.
Definitely a really good revenge film.
Death Race has been brought up in our chat room.
Is that really?
I don't think that's revenge.
Is it a revenge film? Anyway, we'll talk about that.
Well, the new one
afterwards.
Is more revenge than the old one. I'll put it that way. So, anyway, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. How is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory a revenge
film? Now you're
film?
Just making
Zed,
up.
Zed, you're getting silly. All right. We're going to finish up here because we're really
good. Another honorary mention from Nordy that does deserve credit, Harry Brown.
Yeah, actually, I was surprised that Harry Brown didn't make either of our lists.
With me,
I can actually honestly say I forgot.
Yeah, no, that was my reasoning as well.
Yeah,
Just didn't think about that.
Actually,
one.
If I had thought about it, I probably would have been number one on my list.
Yeah.
Harry Brown was an awesome film about
awesome
revenge.
Revenge tale.
Awesome revenge tale. So, yes, do go see that. We'll throw that in honorary mentions as well. Okay, agree or disagree with anything we've got to say. If you loved Faster and completely disagree with what we had to say, send it to us. Let us know what you thought about and reason your arguments. We'd like to hear them. Feedback at geekactually.com is where you're going to be able to do that. You can also drop us a voicemail, 02-8011-3167, or our Skype handle is geekactually. He's still under there. Don't worry. He ain't going anywhere under that phone. You can get merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow the Tumblr logs of Josh and I, do whatever you want, or read the actual site because it's doing really well at the moment. Go to geekactually.com. And remember, we also do a tech and geeks /geek podcast called Geek Actually, which goes out on iTunes. Just search for Geek Actually. And of course, we record this whole mess from beginning to end, Geek Actually and Film Actually, on geekactually.com/live. How many times can I say Geek Actually in one sentence?
A lot, apparently.
geekactually.com/live. We start typically around 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time. At the moment, UTC plus 11. We also have to do a couple of shout-outs to our friends. First of all, weekendronan.com, which is the home of the Real Junkies podcast. I had a long talk with Fox on Skype the other day, so hopefully we're getting closer and closer to teeing up some
Tron special.
Shall
we announce, actually, one of the things that we will be talking about on that show, which is that people should start organizing their words for the giveaway? For that?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Part of the coming Tron collaboration between us and the Weekend Ronin, which we will be getting Fox, hopefully, from the boys over to talk out just the whole culture of Tron more than anything, just everything that is Tron.
Watch your hand there, dude. You
can smack. The whole thing behind this is if you guys are Tron fans and you can come up with a reason that you like the original better than the sequel. That is my call to you. Give me at least 5 reasons why the original is better than the sequel. If you're one of these people, I have a copy of Tron
Evolution.
Tron Evolution on either console that I can get to you. So either the Xbox or the PlayStation 3. So, yes. What's on the mic? I don't know. There's a lot of confusion.
This is my little chicken. Don't worry about him.
Yes. Anyway, so yes, that is my. We're getting questions. The chat room is not where to do this.
It's the grading fast. All right. So if you want to win a copy, it's not new. We're going to be starting to give away lots of things, basically, because we have excess stuff all the time, and we decided that rather than try and sell this stuff, we're just going to give it away to you guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Josh has got a couple of copies of Tron Evolution. Xbox or PlayStation.
Yeah.
If you want a chance to win a copy of this this game, send in a reasoned argument in, what is it, 25 words or less?
Yep.
25 words or less, why
the original was the original better than the
was better than the sequel.
And
okay.
Just what email address one more time?
feedback@geekactually.com. Yep. Now, you've got plenty of time because we're actually going to officially announce this on the Tron special, yep, which we will be doing sometime this week.
Yeah.
So we will put out notifications as to when that's going live,
yep,
and you'll be able to watch that. And if you send your responses in, you could have a chance to win this.
Absolutely.
Okay? What we're talking about with these giveaways is also, like, I replace DVDs with Blu-rays a mm-hmm. lot. And so I end up with all these Blu-rays, these DVDs that I don't need anymore. So we're going to start giving them away to you guys.
Yep.
So be prepared for little questions like this so you guys can win stuff. Okay. So this is the way it's going to work. Okay, yep. Now, completely derailed. I'm hot, I'm sweating. Funky Weekend Ronin, shot. That's right. Real Junkies podcast. Like us, they do films, they drink tequila. I think that's
go look at them next.
Go look them up. Rachel at the Funky Film Show, which you can find Thursday nights, Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM or RadioFremantle.com if you can't listen to it live.
Next.
Great show. Next, you.
RoDLC.com. We go out live on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Go check it out and check out the website while you're there. Next.
Somebody in our chat room has said, Wasp Catcher app for iPhone.
Just next.
Next. All right, find out more about our cartoonist, John Spencer.
Josh Spencer
over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He did our artwork. He's wonderful. Josh is going to call him soon, apparently.
It's really right. Hot.
And we're going to get out of here because if I check the current temperature, it's probably about 41 degrees. So we want to get ourselves out of here. That's it. We're done. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, Josh.
Bye.